This is just a continuity announcement for the start of our episode with Alex Gray, aka Apollo. Since we recorded, there have been two pieces of news that need to be noted. Firstly, Lewis Rees-Zammit has signed a three-year deal with the Kansas City Chiefs. Many congratulations to him. What you may or may not know is Alex played for 3 years at the Atlanta Falcons, so we ask him about his time in the NFL and the challenges that lie ahead for Lewis. Secondly, Gladiators has been recommissioned for a second series, so many congrats to Alex on that. It's a fantastic episode. Thank you, as always, to Continental Tires for their support. Please enjoy.
When they said Apollo, I was like, yeah, I
like that. I'll take that. Yeah.
I was like, without absolutely screaming and jumping out of my skin, I was like, I think that's fine. Yeah, let's do that one.
Oh, God. Apollo. Oh, do I want that one?
Apollo, the god of the sun, is what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, that one, yeah.
Yeah. Well, when you're the most electrifying man on Saturday night television, you're in a good place. 6'5", 112 kilograms, can run 100 meters in 11 seconds. My mum says I'm very handsome. Or was that your mum? And then I can't remember.
That showbiz right there.
So good, mate.
Because obviously you did the sevens.
Yeah.
And then Atlanta Falcons came on the horizon. I remember chatting to you at the time, like, mate, this is ridiculous.
So you could sign a 10-year deal in it for an NFL team and then just get rid of you tomorrow. And it's the same for the coaches. So everyone's feeling that bite and you need to win. It's not a development place. You know, that's college. We're playing to win.
Into the final moments, Alex Payne trying to keep this side going forward. Haskell takes it on now with just relentless chat, largely about himself. And there's Tindall to add the finishing touch of glamour and World Cup winning stories and a slightly sideways nose. That is how you podcast. A dominant display by the good, the bad and the rugby.
Hello, Dream Team. Sorry, I'm just trying to be like Alex Payne. Hi, Dream Team. It's James Haskell here. You asked for less, James Haskell, but instead we've given you more. James Haskell, you said the show would be good without me, but it's only me today. Alex and Tins are away, holidaying, golfing. They don't really care about you like I care about you. I'm here on a Monday before I'm flying to Geneva, but we're less one Lord of the Manor, but we've replaced him with another. I'm joined by my good friend from my Paris days, Ollie Phillips. How are you?
Wonderful to be here, James. Thanks ever so much.
You haven't aged, which means you looked that bad when I first met you.
This is how old I looked at 21.
You did? Yeah.
Benjamin Button, as we used to call me.
Yeah,
the way
but unfortunately you haven't got any younger, though.
No.
It's like Benjamin Button just stopped one
Brad
day.
Pitt is still on the horizon somewhere, I'm hoping.
I would honestly laugh if we got to like 70 and you just looked unbelievable.
Like just perfect rig.
The rig's
all my
actually,
hair's growing
the
out.
Thing is, the rig was good. Thanks. The rig was always good. It was just covering a lot of dog
well, you
hair.
You kindly named me the prawn, actually. Cut the head off, you left the best part. That's what you should tell everyone. Which was always a delight as we went out every time. But
now,
to be here.
Now we are joined by, I'm so jealous of you that you're described as a gladiator. I've called myself a gladiator in my private life. But Alex Gray, a.k.a. Apollo, how are you, sir?
It's Mr. Apollo to you, Hask.
God, he's in character.
He's in character already.
I'm so sorry.
I'm a method actor.
I'm so sorry, Mr. Apollo. Can I make eye contact with you? How are you?
I'm good. Fantastic to be here. Excited. Great to see you guys. Fan of the show.
Because you know Ollie from back in the day, don't you?
Yeah, we go way back. Maybe not as far back as you two, like, but looking at the state you're both. But.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Hey, coming into my show, Mr. Apollo. Yeah. See how nice. Tough you are when I filled you in the background. No. Ollie, do you want to remind everyone of Alex's varied and wonderful career to date?
With absolute pleasure, James. Thank you for that. So for those of you who don't know, Alex, formerly England under-16s, under-18s and under-20s captain, star of the England Seven side. And in 2017, he quit rugby to go and pursue a career with the NFL, with the Atlanta Falcons, before coming back into the UK to become Apollo the Gladiator.
Wow.
That doesn't sound too bad, does it?
No, stop it. Sorry about you.
Sorry about me, yeah.
Talk to me about the Gladiators, because you know, we're going to cover the rugby, we're going to cover the NFL, we're going to cover the sevens. You've had an amazing kind of journey, but just how mega has becoming a gladiator been?
Yeah, amazing. Didn't really realise how, you know, big a thing it was going to be. We did the live shows back in May, which was a long time ago now, it feels like. And there was such an amazing buzz about it. It was, you know, everyone was going wild at the time. And it felt like it was really good, felt like it was going to be big, but you just never know if it was going to come through the screen. And then first episode, I think we got, you know, 9 million people watching the show, right? So that's like originally when they first came in, they told us it was 6 million. We were buzzing about that, which is one in every 10 people in the UK pretty much watch that show live on television at the time it was on. And then the viewing figures came a little later, you know, almost 9 million people. Biggest show on TV, so
you were just cash money in your head, right? That's what you're thinking.
Well, when you're the most electrifying man on Saturday night television, you're in a good place.
Did you think it was ironic?
Sorry, this is amazing. I've met someone who's got even worse chat than I have. What?
I'll leave.
Yours is better. You'll be right. Have you been described as the most electrifying man on Saturday night TV?
Or is that by a lot of people, mostly myself.
Fine.
Yeah.
Have you noticed? Like a difference now when you walk down the street, are people noticing you? Has there been a real hype? Because obviously you have become a bit of a character on that show.
Yeah, there's definitely been a bit of a surreal change, you know, whether it's catching a train or walking down the street.
It's probably more surreal just the Greek god of sun walking through Barnard Castle. Right? There's a certain irony in that one.
Yeah, sure. I don't know if it's the fake tan that I'm wearing, but it also helps I wear the costume everywhere I go. So that kind of, I'm down there in the local supermarket wrestling people for the last loo roll. So it's been amazing. And as I said, the reach of it is just crazy. You know, the amount of people that come up and are saying, it's not just kids. It's like parents, our kids love it. We love it. Because I think a lot of parents have kind of forced their kids to watch it because obviously they loved it as a kid. But yeah, I'm getting kind of stopped everywhere these days, which is cool.
Because Ollie, you're a bit of a fan of it, aren't you? You were telling me you're quite giddy because I know you guys played at Newcastle together. Yeah. Obviously the Sevens. You were World Sevens Player of the Year, by the way. I forgot to mention that. We've got Mr. Apollo here, World Sevens Player of the Year.
Black and white TV. That's what I'm
Because you know what? Actually, just I don't think the listeners will appreciate this, but I go around the world as International Man of Mystery, and people always say to me when they found out that I used to play rugby, not particularly well, that they always say, oh, I know that rugby player. And I'm like, who's that? Johnny Wilkinson? Dan Carter, Richard McCall, like, no, that Ollie Phillips. You are the most famous rugby player in the world.
Thank you. Mr. Worldwide.
I don't know how you're doing it. Is it because you start every meeting with a business card with Ollie Phillips, World Seventh Player of the
Correct.
Year?
Correct, that's what he's doing. And also, as you noted, as a 21-year-old running around with sunroof, looking like a horrible grey badger. The highlight for me or the low light for me was when I played in the varsity match. I think I was 35, 36. And my wife, my girlfriend at the time, was sat in the crowd and someone said, oh, I didn't realise they let professors play in the match now.
Wow.
And I knew at that point. It was probably time just to...
Because Michael Checker as well, we played at Stade Français together and Michael Checker used to call the accountant, didn't he? Because he said he looked like an accountant. Ollie was top try scorer that season in the top 14. Unbelievable. He used to play incredibly well, but honestly looked like an accountant.
Look at him blushing there.
I used to shorts for a high...
Real high,
right
up.
Right high up.
I mean, that must have been a hell of a time at Stad.
It was, it was. That was quite... I mean, we're still getting over it, you know. But you've remodeled yourself now as a family man, haven't you? I'm sort of coming
just
back.
Just living the facade. Just trying, yeah.
You're going full circle, Hask.
Truth, Hask.
The truth. But no, but you're saying you're a fan. You're watching it on Saturday nights now, aren't you?
Yeah. Actually, Apollo did us a huge favour a few weeks ago where Alex kindly... I messaged him, said, look, mate, our kids are absolutely obsessed with it. It's sort of like a ritual. Every Saturday night, bang, sit in front of the telly. And then we have to watch it, obviously, 17 times over and repeat afterwards. So I rang him and said, look, would you give the kids a call just before bedtime? And they're sitting having their food and bang, put the phone on FaceTime. And my two daughters, Lily Mae and Nia, were like, oh my God, it's Apollo. It's Apollo. It's Apollo. And then they didn't speak to him for like 2 minutes. So it was one of those awkward moments.
Just mesmerised.
Yeah, just mesmerised. So we had to just... I was like... He rang and then had to basically ad-lib for 2 minutes. Yeah, till one of them said...
How's life? Yeah.
I love that. But what... So you obviously have a fan. How did you start? Like, tell us the process of becoming a gladiator. So you finished with the NFL. Mm-hmm. You came back and what were you doing?
So I came back.
You went to Bath, didn't you, after that?
Yeah. But there was a little bit of a period. It was a little bit of a rocky period for me because I came back. My contract finished with the Falcons, came back, and I was probably looking to go and work out for other teams. I came back in the off season, went on holiday to Dubai for a week. And as I was coming back, COVID was hitting, right? And at the time, I probably had a split decision to make. Do I go back to the US and set up camp, or do I stay in the UK with friends, family, etc.? And I probably, like everyone, I thought, this thing will be gone in a month or two and I'll be back out there working out with different teams or whatever. You know, 18 months later, I'm still stuck in the UK. My visa's ran out. They shut all the applications and, you know, without a visa, you can't get a team. Without a team, you can't get a visa. So I was just stuck in a pretty tough place. But I'd been training the entire time and yeah, got a shot with Bath eventually because I was like, I'm just not going to be able to get out back out here. So that kind of like finished fairly abruptly, or maybe I say abruptly, but felt like a slow death, you know, week by week, month by month, that kind of window was just closing. I thought, well, I'm back here now and I'm going to get back into rugby. But the first thing I actually did was actually had a sit down with Eddie Jones.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, yeah. And we actually spoke about, you know, the like central contracts.
Yes.
Basically, I reached out to him and said, look, I want to get back into rugby. I'm not that interested in just going and playing for a team and getting stuck in the kind of rigmarole of trying to, you know, get, you know, win people's favour, et cetera. And at the time, he was talking all about the hybrid player, right? And I thought, well, if anyone can do that, it'll probably be me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we had a couple of conversations about it. It ended up on the CEO's desk. And then the next, we were trying to push it pretty much. And I thought, well, this is going to be an amazing thing to do as well. Then all of a sudden, they let 170 people go or whatever in the midst of COVID. And the next thing was like, well, we can't be seen getting rid of all these people and then bringing you in on a central contract.
Right.
So that was that done. So that was another disappointment, but we, you know, move on, went to Bath.
How was, sorry, just interrupt. How was Eddie with it? What was he?
You said the magic word, like Haskins come alive.
No. I'm just interested because I know Eddie always looked at other sports, was always looking for those hybrid players. What did he see in you? What was it he liked? Was he amenable? Because you reached out to him. You know, I mean, that's a great hustle game, that.
Yeah. I put a nice little email together. I put a Arnold Schwarzenegger quote at the very end about...
Which one?
Come on. I'll be back. Come on. No. Get to the quote.
I am back. it was about the... it was the one where he... you can't climb the ladder of success with your hands in your pockets.
Oh, good.
So put it on a postcard.
Well done. Jimmy Carr finishes his emails with death to your enemies. I quite like that.
I think that would prompt more of a response than yours. Yeah.
I saw everything on Instagram the other day.
Jimmy, sorry.
An intro to an email when you're annoyed at someone is, I hope this email finds you before I do.
Look, how much, you've given so much arsenal.
I love it. I love that.
This has just turned into a 15-hour podcast of quotes now.
Wait, so much to discuss. Right, so tell me, so he was amenable to that.
So I think obviously, you know, was it just a bit of a, like a coaching ploy from him, that kind of idea of a hybrid player? He wanted someone who could play probably in the back row / centre, a little bit like Bottier does for La Rochelle,
right?
But then, you know, the other thing for me was I could go up in a line out or whatever, play on the wing as well. So,
Do you speak to him? Do you meet up with him?
I met with him a couple of times, yeah.
Oh, right.
And then... That was, it was very exciting at the time because, you know, as a kid, all I wanted to do was play for England. And that was what I said to him. I was like, look, I've been to the NFL. That was absolutely amazing. But there is that huge itch of playing for my country. I played for England for the Sevens, but that's the big ticket, right? Twickenham, 80,000 people sold out for the 15-a-side team. And I wanted a shot at that. Gave it my best go. We got pretty close, but he just said, there's just no money, mate. So that was it.
Because he's taking it all, probably.
Well, yeah.
And I was like, I'll do it for free.
And then they fired him. Yeah. And then he got paid triple the money and then went to Australia. So win-win.
Then
left the Japan. Basically just all out of cash. I'm interested because the way you talk a little bit about, I know you were joking about Mr. Apollo and kind of sending a letter. That's quite an American way of doing things. I'm getting that vibe from in a good way, but like, they do things very different over there. Do you feel like you've absorbed that NFL mentality, like super positivity, super forward, that real high energy where you know, seize life, the American dream kind of vibe?
Well, yeah, it's that American dream kind of mentality, isn't it? I think I probably have always had a little bit of that in going to America, being surrounded by that. And you see it on all the movies, right? The speeches before the games and everyone's like, oh, it's a bit cringe. But when you're in it, there's nowhere better. It's just because you are part of it, you're living it. Everyone's going the same way. And yes, they're using all the cliche words and phrases, et cetera, but you're just like, God, this is absolutely amazing. And did it solidify that in me? Yes, but I do kind of think as an individual, that's always been my kind of, in my psyche anyway.
No, because it's quite unusual. Like I have a little bit of that kind of, or everything I do is a hustle. You know, you're a hustler as well.
I'll talk us through it, because obviously you did the Sevens.
Yeah.
And then Atlanta Falcons came on the horizon. I remember chatting to you at the time, like, mate, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like, where's that come from? I know 2016, you wanted to hit the, you know, Olympics and Rio and whatever else, and that didn't quite happen, right? Mm. But what was the process? How did that all come about? Like, because obviously we're seeing it now in the headlines with the Lewis Rees-Sammet. So just talk us through that sort of process. You were like one of the first sort of pioneers from rugby to actually go and do this.
Yeah, I mean, I guess life's just a funny thing, isn't it? At the time, I thought that was going to be the craziest thing I was ever going to do. And then obviously Gladiators comes along and we top it. But at the time, I missed out on the Olympics, which was just absolutely gutting for me. you put a huge amount into that and thought I probably deserved to be on that plane.
You got stitched. I remember you had got an injury, your ankle or something.
Yeah, it was like one tournament before. So we played a couple of warm-up tournaments. And, you know, I was player of the year the year prior, right? So I was like in pole position, I thought, anyway. Got injured in the last warm-up tournament. So played on the Saturday, got injured. Team was named on the Monday. And yeah, that went against me. I was told I needed that tournament to secure a place, but you know, it is what it is. And I actually I signed for Leeds in the Championship. I went and played centre for them, because that was kind of the reason I got into the sevens in the first place. I was playing back row for, you know, had a stellar underage career, probably hit a little bit of, you know, sticky mud early 20s coming out with the 20s program. And I had actually, you know, another name drop here in the rugby world. I had a chat with Stuart Lancaster when he was the England guy, and he was saying, look, we've got no, because he used to be the, used to look after all the academies.
Yeah,
right?
He did.
He was like the head guy when I was coming up. So, yeah. You know, he'd come and visit me at school, and I had quite a direct line of contact with him. I sat down with him for some advice, and he said, look, why don't you, I've always thought this about you, why don't you, you know, think about playing in the backs? And because we've got no, you know, we had, you know, they had Manu at the time, but there's not a lot of big centers in the UK, right? And I think they've struggled with that for a while now. So I thought, he said, why don't you go to the sevens and do this and, you know, do 2 or 3 years there and come out, get your skills sharp and, you know, see what the Prem has to offer as a center, right? I thought, yeah, why not? As you know, like go travel the world as a young guy in your 20s and live that up. So
guy looking old and stuff.
Yeah. So went and did that, had an amazing time, came back, you know, missed out on the Olympics. Went and signed for Leeds as a centre. And I thought, right, well, I'm just going to fight back here and climb my way back into the Prem, because no one wanted to offer me a deal. And I'd spent hours and hours and hours putting together this highlight reel of myself that's out on YouTube. And I thought it was, you know, I thought it was the sickest thing I could have ever done. But not a single Premiership team took a nibble on it, right? So obviously that was a bit gutting.
Wrong playlist.
Yeah, it might have been the music, actually. I had a bit of Arctic Monkeys on there.
Did you?
Yeah.
Should have gone to the DJ.
Was I even a DJ? Then? I don't know. Who knows, I was probably still playing, wasn't I? Yeah. I'm messing around.
Definitely,
but the funny thing is, that video, while it didn't hit, you know, didn't get anything from a Premiership standpoint, NFL scouts saw that and, you know, went mad over it. And they were like, we've got to speak to this guy. So I was playing at Leeds. I got a call from my agent and he just said, you'll never guess what. But some scouts from the NFL UK want to talk to you. Would you fancy having a chat with them? And I said, yeah. And met them at the London offices. You know, they were selling the American dream to me. They were telling me what the big picture was for the NFL. And basically, you know, long story short, in however many years, they want to have a team over here. They want to grow the game. It's as big as it can get in America, right? Yeah. Like it's bigger. It's
yeah, you know, Europe's the focus.
They need a new audience, basically, don't they? Yeah.
And such a media driven league. It's as big as, like, in America, you either like football or you don't. Like, you're not winning anyone over anymore, right? So where else can we go? They want to go into Europe, into the UK. They look at the market of London, you know, the gateway to Europe, and do they want to have a team here, right? But the only way you can do that is by growing a fan base. The only way you can do that is by having players from that local market playing in the league. And that's where I came in. They said, we've been looking for a player for a while. And would it be something, we think you fit the bill, there's a couple of positions you could probably play. Do you fancy giving it a go? And I said, fuck it. Yeah, let's do it. So I went and did some workouts for them just to see if I could actually, like, catch a ball and do all the stuff. And they said, yeah. And they were like, come out to, this was in the middle of the season, right? So I just had to give everything up. And Leeds let me do that. And they just said, let's go out to Florida. We'll try and teach you the game. We'll give you 8 weeks, crash course. We'll put you in front of some scouts, we'll make you do a combine, yeah, try and teach you as much about the game as we can, and we'll see if anyone wants to pick you up.
How hard was that to pick the game up?
It was incredibly hard. It was incredibly hard at the time, and then when I joined the Falcons in Atlanta, it was just multiplied, because I thought I'd done a lot, right? And I was studying every day, I was practicing every day, working really, really hard, and I get to training camp, and I realized I knew nothing, right? And there was like stuff in the stuff. I was there for 3 years, and there was things in my third year that I was doing for the first time, as in like a play call stuff, types of plays. So it was, yeah.
So what happens in those 8 weeks? Is that what Lewis Rees Hammond's now doing?
It's
the same thing, right?
It is. I'd say it's the same thing, but it is also completely different. So when I did it, we were like the canaries down the mine, right? This was a conceptual thing where, we were basically, if it works, we'll continue it. If it doesn't, we'll probably scrap it. So there's a lot of pressure in that sense. And we were out in Florida. We were training at some random high school. We were in some random gym, just kind of making do a little bit, right? Whereas now those guys...
just prepping you for a combine.
Yeah, pretty much. Right. Trying to get us just ready to go in front of scouts, being like, oh, this guy might be able to play or might be able to join in a training camp or whatever. Whereas now these guys are at the IMG Academy, which, you know, if you want to go there as a student, it costs $70,000 a year. It's probably the most amazing sports facilities you'll ever see on the planet, right? It's an amazing place, and they have position coaches. They have everything there. So they're in a much, and they go for a longer period of time. So that program has just developed and blossomed into an amazing thing. And so has the program as a whole, right? There was four of us that started. Now there's spots for, each team has a spot. So we could have 32 international players in the league now, which is, you know, is absolutely amazing.
I was going to say, do you think the limiting factor is game understanding? Because one of the things that everybody always talks about with the NFL is that, you know, you can be an incredible athlete, but actually knowing in a game, you're competing against guys that have played since college, that absolutely live and breathe it. For some of them, it's an escape from poverty. It's even doubling, you know, double down on a reason to be successful. Is it a game understanding that holds you back? Because that's what they said about Christian Wade, that he obviously came in, had amazing impact. But if you watch his second run that he had when he broke through, instead of running towards his blockers, he ran towards the posts because of rugby. Mm. Basically ran away and got tackled and didn't use his blockers. And because of that, scouts are like, it's not what you should have done. And so they couldn't train him in time to be able to do that. And he didn't have the ability to learn the game. You're basically saying 3 years in, you were still trying to learn the game, which is mental.
Yeah, it's just time in the saddle is ultimately what it is, right? Because there's just so much to learn. And it's not a... the pressure is so high in that league because everyone's on a day-to-day rolling contract. Players, coaches, you know, you could sign a rugby, you sign a 3-4 year deal, you know, where you're going to be for 3 or 4 years. You could sign a 10-year deal in it for an NFL team and then you just get rid of you tomorrow. And it's the same for the coaches. So everyone's feeling that bite and you need to win. It's not a development place. You know, that's college. We're playing to win.
So those contracts being toffee over there, like, you know, 10-year deal, 400 million. It can be just
And I mean, you'll see in the news recently, Russell Wilson, you know, huge star of the game, has won a Super Bowl, amazing quarterback. He signed to the Denver Broncos on $80 odd million guaranteed, and they've just let him go because he's the wrong fit, and they want somebody else. So they still have to pay him $80 million, but they just don't want him in the building.
That's right.
What happens is you'll see when you watch like Hard Knocks, you'll see there'll be contract $50 million guaranteed too. So that is the guaranteed money that matters. You know, that's why, because Patrick Mahomes is on 450 over 10 years, but he's guaranteed 250. Yeah. So you know, he's making 250, the rest is bonuses and bits and pieces. Sure. That's where it doesn't mean anything. Like a signing, you know, you want to get a contract and a signing bonus. Otherwise, coach needs to see you, bring your playbook.
Yeah, all I want to know is, what was the quote that you sent the Atlanta Falcons? To get in the mix for that one.
Yeah.
I mean... come on, Eddie Jones didn't quite nibble.
Yeah. Can't climb a ladder with your hands in your pockets. What did the Falcons get?
Remembered.
No, I mean, I was just a starry-eyed boy when I joined that team. There was
But how did that happen? Like, you did 8 weeks in someone's back garden.
Yeah, did it.
Yeah. Went to the combine.
Yeah, did 8 weeks.
Local leisure centre.
Yeah. There was a bit of a nervous wait, right? So we basically got assigned a division, which had Atlanta, Carolina, the Saints and the Buccaneers. So it's from those teams. Did they want to take a chance on us? Atlanta were like, yeah, we could do with him. The other guys got divvied up to whoever else. And I was in London. We'd done the 8 weeks and we'd come back and we were just waiting. So we were just training and waiting in London with the NFL UK guys, waiting for a phone call basically. And then they called us into the office one day and they were like, it's happening. And they're basically like, yeah. I was in the office and there was like, they basically said, there's someone on the phone who wants to speak to you. And it was Dan Quinn, the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons. And he basically just said, we'd love to have you join us if you're up for it. And it was a very, very surreal moment, you know, because it's just one of those things that you see it far away, right? You see it on the TV screens, you play Madden on the PlayStation. There's just such this great storytelling around the NFL.
Yeah.
And you know, a kid from County Durham to think that you're actually going to go over there and do that and experience that and compete and play. It was just absolutely mind blowing. So
a kid from County Durham.
Yeah, yeah, that
behind
kid from County Durham there, the emo from Arctic Monkeys.
Twice.
Oh, you look like you'd be seeing drugs. Don't work.
That was my rock era. I'm bringing it back. I need a haircut right now. Actually, I'm kind of bringing it back.
To be fair though, my hair's falling out. I could do that barnet that you've swept across. That's
the trick, mate. That's the trick.
That is just also what I remember. He's obviously single. If there's any ladies who want the emo look or the slightly bigger man, where can they get your highlight reel on YouTube now? Because just in case any birds are confused or...
I think it'll probably come under best, most handsome rugby player ever to have lived.
Alex Gray.
Alex Apollo.
The SEO's vying with Hask's show.
Yeah, there's a lot of show reels. Yeah. All my show reels are all made by me. Yeah. So you got the call.
Yeah.
You go over there. Were you a big NFL fan? Or was it... Because the thing is,
Was it just cash? You're like Atlanta Falcons.
when I was young, well, I was 25. I spoke to NFL Europe about doing some stuff, and I realised just too old. I wasn't gonna, and I wasn't as good an athlete as you were. But I looked into it, explored it, got an agent, was talking to different people, was going to try to do that kind of stuff, and then I realised I was giving up a really good contract with WAS. So I never did it. I wondered, but I was a fan of the showbiz, the razzmatazz, the athletic ability, and the fact that I was just be a linebacker and just hit people. I know, it's very out of character.
I can't believe it.
That I was going to be like that kind of person. Was that what attracted you to it, or was it the fact you were actually a diehard fan? Tell the truth now, because Lewis Rees-Zammit reckons he's doing it because his dad played for NFL, which is
his eyes just aren't going with the money sign.
His dad played for like Cardiff.
Yeah, it's such a load of nonsense.
Cardiff Buccaneers.
Tell the truth. You want to become a global star that earns an absolute boatload of cash. Let's do it.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately that was a big pull for me. I think post-Olympic failure, there was an element of probably fell out of love with rugby a little bit and wanted an opportunity to have my back against the wall again a little bit and just reinvent. Well, I say reinvent myself. I know that sounds a little funny, but I just wanted to cut and press play. And that's what this kind of was for me. I knew nothing about the game. I was starting from zero again, right? So there was that huge element of kind of intrinsic motivation to prove myself once again. But yeah, as you said, like the razzmatazz, showbiz side of it is an amazing pull as well, because you just don't really get that anywhere in the UK.
How did it look when you pulled up in the car park on like a Fiat 500 and the rest of them are in like Lambos?
I mean, the car park was a nice place if you're a car lover. There was the whole roster of Ferrari.
I imagine lots of people like to know the route that this happens, right? So you get Atlanta Falcons call you up and say they want you in the squad, but that doesn't mean you're in the squad, right? That you're in a training squad, is that right?
And yeah,
that's
yeah.
not in the I don't know, whatever match day squad. Like, how does that all work?
Yeah, so I think if you've been watching the or seeing some of the stuff coming out about Lewis, you know, there's a lot of numbers quoted, right? 900K offers being put to him, and that is what is offered. That's what you'll sign for, but you'll only make that money if you make the team. The
900K, 5K guaranteed.
Not even, probably won't be even guaranteed as a national guy.
Yeah. Have you spoke to him?
I think he asked for my number from one of the guys at Gloucester that I know, but I've not heard from him.
Only
yet.
If he's got a good quote.
He's...
What quote would get you to reply?
Yeah.
What do you think?
maybe something from, what's that Rocky one where he's like, nothing hits as hard as life.
Oh, yeah.
Something like that. Something that has to be very American.
If he dies, he dies.
Adrian! Ollie!
Yeah, it'd have to be something very, very American.
Right, okay, fine. Motivated. But so... as Ollie was saying, so you're in that training squad. You arrived, and what was the vibe after that?
So it was basically you go through. Everyone's got a chance of making a team in preseason, right? So that was pretty much the same for me. Everyone's fighting for those spots. You basically do preseason split up into kind of a 6 month kind of haul. So you do what's called mini camp, which is the rookie. At the time, I was a rookie, so you start even earlier. You go in and you just get used to all the play calling and the playbook that we're going to use. You get your hands on it for the first time.
Playbook's like that, isn't it? It's like a Bible.
Well, it is. We have it on iPads now, thankfully. But it was, you know, there's just thousands and thousands of stuff in there. And like every play you'll see written up, there'll be certain little tweaks and certain little, depending on what the defense is doing. I've actually gone back to saying defense now rather than defense. I was saying defense for a long time.
Well done. Well done.
And as we said earlier, that is the hardest part, is learning that play. But you have to. I never went to university I went straight into professional rugby, so it was actually like learning how to study again. In some of the days in training camp, man, training camp will take years off your life. You're in at seven. Sometimes you're not leaving a meeting room with your coaches until past 11 o'clock. And then you're going home and you're quickly studying because you get the plays for the next day, and you're just looking at the plays for the next day, making sure you're all up to scratch. Then you come back the next day and you've got to do it all again. And
if you mess up, for example, in training, because sometimes you only might get one run at it, don't you? Because that's what, from what I've seen, the guys who are the starters will get most of the reps. You might get one rep, and you have to nail it. And if you fuck it, what happens? Do people shout at you? Will they blame you? Or do you just go like head in hands? I mean, how do you deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, it is a pressure cooker. Like the training environment there, every day matters. Every day almost feels like a game day. You've got like, before you're going out, everyone's got their music in. No one's talking to each other. It's very like, I wouldn't say it's crack.
Not really.
You are up until maybe like 40 minutes before training. And everyone just like that, as you said, for a game, you'd flip that switch. Everyone's kind of in the zone because they know, especially in training camp, you're fighting for a job. You're fighting for a place in the NFL. And they make no bones about it. They are always looking for people to replace you. So day to day, I would go for breakfast, right? This was in training camp during the season, whatever. You'd go for breakfast with a guy. You're chatting to him. How's your kids? How's your whatever, your family? By lunchtime, there's someone else sat in his spot with the nameplates already changed and he's gone. And yeah, and that would happen on a weekly basis. It's not like the rugby environment where a lot of people are from the same place. You grow up through the academy, you come together, you've got a squad together for 5, 6, 7 years. You know, 70% of NFL squads change every year, right? So you've got new faces coming in every single season. I remember turning up for preseason my second year. We needed a squad of 90 people for preseason training. There was 30 of us. They'd changed, the other 60 were yet to be decided. So it is a ruthless place in that sense.
How did that progress? And so you got into it. You're running the reps. Did you get close to getting on an active spot?
Are you the first? Let me just write. You were the first British person to captain an NFL team, correct? You captained
first
the
international,
Falcons.
I think. Definitely first British. Yeah, maybe first international. It was for a preseason game, however much that's worth. But for me, that was an amazing.
That'd be awesome. That'd be an incredible experience.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, it was, and probably my most favourite sporting moment I had was the speech prior. So we did a meeting. You stay in a hotel when you play games in the NFL. Everyone stays in a hotel, whether it's home or away, the night before, and all the captains have to get up and give a bit of a speech. And I gave one, and I actually got like a stand. Everyone was hollering and whooping, and afterwards,
What'd you go for? Come on, give us an insight. What was said?
I don't know if it was the accent or whatever, but I basically was talking about it was a reflection of my own experience, right? Where, you know, it doesn't, as you were saying, it doesn't matter if you're getting 60 reps or you're getting 5. You know, whatever you get, you've got to make it count. That this is it. This is everybody's dream. You're not going to be. Not everyone can do this. And if you want it, you've got to show it. And it was basically something around that.
Yeah.
Around
those.
Ultimately, yeah.
And it gives us a love.
Got to fight for that inch.
Yeah. And everyone was. It almost like erupted.
Really.
I wish someone had got it on. Maybe they got it on camera.
You're not putting in the highlight reel.
Yeah, I would.
If I put it on a YouTube channel.
If I ever get my hands on that clip, that's going.
If anyone from the NFL's watching, can we please get it? Because they'll love that.
Atlanta Falcons. Can we please have a copy?
Yeah, Atlanta Falcons are definitely watching. So okay, so that was a moment you erupted, and then how did you play in the game?
Well, this is the thing. I mean, if I was going to be completely honest about my own development, I was a pretty good practice squad player. And the thing is about me as a player, I could do all the flash stuff. I could beat someone one-on-one. I could catch. I could go for a diving catch. I could do all that stuff that not everyone else could do. But what I really struggled with was the things that you had done from a kid, right? Lining up in the right place, like getting off on a snap count when they're like, said hut, like, jump, like going off on not jumping off sides and all that type of stuff, where these guys have been doing it. It was just like second nature. That's what I struggled with. I struggled with those little intricacies that most people wouldn't even think twice about. You know, you asked me go and beat this guy one-on-one and score a touchdown against the starters in practice. No problem. Like I could do that. I was doing that week in, week out. And that's probably why I lasted 3 years with Atlanta, because I trained so well. But when it came to the games, in my last year, I was pretty good in probably, would have had a shot if I'd gone somewhere else. I kind of feel like with Atlanta, because I'd got so much water under the bridge with them, I was kind of always the international guy.
But they also see your deficiencies more readily
than
anyone
else. Yeah, of course. And I think as an international guy, this is what you're coming up against. It doesn't matter how well you do. You do one, it's like two steps forward. You do one, you do something bad, it's three steps
back. Like, oh, it's the international guy.
Yeah,
again.
Exactly. There was.
He's put his helmet on the wrong way.
Yeah.
Ultimately, he's walking into walls.
All those intangibles. Oh, God, he's put the pads on. Oh.
Yeah, ultimately, that's probably how I felt towards the end. I felt like I'd made huge, huge strides. And where I probably was, you know, talking to some of the senior guys in my room, the guys who I was using for mentorship, they kind of said, you're probably on par with some of the best tight ends in college. So I probably, what I would have loved to is have gone to another team, not the rugby player from the UK, but as a football player, and just been able to have a clean slate and just gone for it from there.
And you would have done that if COVID hadn't happened and you had decided to stay, if you hadn't decided to stay in England and actually gone back to America, that's what would have happened.
Yeah, that would have been the plan. Yeah. My agent, I had an American agent, they were setting up kind of meetings. Because it's very...
Where were you looking at going? Where was on the horizon?
There was a couple of chats with Tampa were one.
Oof.
Which they were in the same division as us. And what you normally get is some of our coaches had gone to other places so they can kind of vouch for you a little bit.
Right.
Denver was another one.
Would that have been Tampa when Tom Brady and the Gronk were going to turn up?
No, I don't think so. It would have been before that golden era for them. And a couple others. But, you know, your agent, that's your agent's job, etc. But, yeah, that was just how the cards
fell. If you were to describe or sum up your NFL experience, how would it? Was it you've left stuff undone? Do you feel like you could have done more? What did you get squeeze all the juice out of it? Was it successful? How do you feel about it now?
Obviously, as a competitor, as a sportsman, there's nothing higher than the NFL, right? You're at the absolute top, the absolute ceiling. So for me to be able to experience that after, you know, not going to the Olympics, et cetera, that is not getting any deals from the Premiership, going and doing that. And it gave me that opportunity that I wanted to have my back against the wall, and I had to fight every single day for reps, because, you know, it all depends on how well you do. If you do well, you get more reps, blah, 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 knocks on. You do well enough, you get named captain for a game. So every day I turned up to work and almost redefined myself and just reached new limits, I think, as a player or as a competitor, as an athlete, but also, you know, as an experience as a human being.
Awesome,
I was traveling around America. Yeah, we would often go to games on a Sunday. We'd often travel on a Thursday.
Talk to us about the off field, right?
Yeah, I was going to. I was like, yeah, wait, all the
this
play
is great,
stuff's great, but because I read the book Boys Will Be Boys, but the Dallas Cowboys.
Used
to have the White House. I won't spoil it. You need to read the book about that. But I just wondered what if there was any like outlandish stories, anything mad.
Well, there's got to be some.
Any given Sunday, did someone chop a car up because they upset them? You know,
I'm going to be completely honest with you. It was pretty tame compared to the rugby days. I've got to say, the days are just so long. The weeks are just so hard. You know, you just don't have any time. We play on a Sunday, and you're in on a Monday, and then your Tuesday's your day off. So the only time you could really go out was a Monday night. But then they've got other stuff, like when we go to different cities, there's like as a grown man, you're given a curfew and you have to be in bed by 9:30, and all the strength conditioning staff are coming around knocking on the
door. Yeah, but a load of them are so stupid. I mean, every year you hear about like some like five numpties that have like
shot up
shot something up and been daft as a brush.
Yeah, so I mean,
there must have been some of that.
I did get told when I first joined the NFL, be careful who you hang around with, because there are obviously some guys in that league who have so much money. They have access to absolutely anything. They can, if they want to get a helicopter down to Miami for the night, they can just do it, right? So, but our team
sounds awful.
Yeah. Our team had a pretty good ethos, I think, as far as that goes. I didn't see any of it.
Yeah, so
I wasn't involved in any of it.
Let's revisit this. Let's revisit this when the cameras aren't rolling, because I'm going to call massive bullshit on this. But anyway,
I actually got asked to join the NFL.
Did you?
Genuinely? Well, what, not, sorry.
Was an accountant?
Let's rewind that. Yeah, as the bookkeeper.
Wasn't it? Yeah.
So in 2009,
was it a senior in NFL that we don't know?
Before I came to Stad in 2009, I got World Player of the Year. At the same time, the Sevens had gotten to the Olympics, and it just coincided with, you know, that all happening. They were like, oh, we want to do this, you know, Olympic sport, crossover athletes, blah blah blah, would you be interested in going over? We've lined up 6 weeks to go train with the 49ers in San Francisco.
So you were the pioneer, really.
Yeah,
also, no, we're giving me the props, but you sound like you're the pioneer.
In my last tournament for England at Edinburgh, of all the places where we tanked and lost the series, I did my knee, like a little bit of cartilage, and then I'd signed for Stad.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I could have gone, done the 6 weeks and had the op after the NFL bit, then that would have meant I wasn't ready for preseason for Stad. And I spoke to Max, said, Max, I've, you know, got this, would it be possible? And obviously,
no, he's bullshit, fuck off.
Yeah, and he promised me that I'd be in the Jeux de Stad calendar.
He was French, yeah, it was great, he was French. Yeah.
Good, he was French or Scottish then.
Yeah, so got binned all around.
Did you?
Yeah.
What would you have been like in the NFL?
Absolutely toilet. But I was going to ask you now, Lewis Rees-Samet, everyone's going on about, he did 4.4 or whatever he did in the combine. I mean, is that any good compared to the other boys that you see kicking about there? Yeah, is he actually going to do any good?
Yeah, I mean, fast is fast. I would say he absolutely athletically does have the potential to play in the NFL, without a doubt. He's the numbers he's put up.
Do you think he will? Coming on the spot now.
Yeah. I think
you can answer as Apollo rather than Alex. Yeah. You can alter your ego.
I think he has got as good a chance as anyone. He's got a great starting point with where that program's at. He's got a lot of support. It is hard, right? If he doesn't make it, I wouldn't say that's really anything to do with his ability to make it. Yeah. It's just such a competitive place.
So you're basically saying athletically, like the same thing for you, but athletically you could do it. It's just, it'll come down to his ability to understand the game and the intangibles or the stuff that is ingrained in the DNA that you would go through college.
I think he does have a good chance. The thing is about the NFL, it's so opportunistic. All he has to do is make the right play at the right time a couple of times, and he's got as good a shot as anyone.
Really?
I saw a lot of press about he'll never make it, blah, blah, blah. And I think people look at, I spoke to some other players and they're like, well, if you can't do it and Christian Wade can't do it, who can do it?
Yeah.
But it's just such an opportunistic place. If he gets with the right team, with the right opportunity, because there's all sorts of stuff that goes
on. He's had three teams, hasn't he, come sniffing?
Yeah, so. Yeah. And I think he's got to be careful. I heard him quote, who has the right plan for me? I'm telling you right now, none of them have a plan for you. Their plan is to win football games, right? And you're either going to be a part of it or you're not. So I wouldn't get lured in by the chat of, oh, we'll develop you this way, blah, blah, blah. Because as I said earlier, you've got a Russell, your starting quarterback's earning $82 million. You have to pay him $82 million. They've got rid of him, right? So if they can get rid of a guy like that, because the thing is, Lewis Riesam is a great athlete, but he's not, I don't know if you guys know Jordan Mailata, the guy who signed for, he was part of the international player program. Yeah. He was no line, 6'9", 350 pounds. Like, he's a dinosaur, right? You don't find those type. Lewis Riesam isn't one of him,
no.
Right? You know what I mean? There are other guys who are athletically as gifted as Riesam. But as I said, opportunistic. If he can make some plays in the preseason, you just don't know. You just don't know. He's got a shot. He's good enough to be there.
Because we've got Jordan Mailata, who was obviously with the Rabbitohs under 20s to the NFL. He won a Super Bowl with Philadelphia Eagles. Yeah. He's done really well. We've had F.A. Obada on here, who actually has got a slightly better story in regards to when he got the phone call. He was actually working at 4 a.m. in the morning stacking flowers at a big nursery in London and got called by the Dallas Cowboys. And they were like, called him up and said, we'd like you to, come over and train. And he was like, whatever, and put the phone down. It's like, whatever. They called him back again. So being invited to the coach obviously is a big moment, but I think working at 4 a.m. in London, stacking shelves with flowers is...
Yeah, if you don't know about FA's story, it's definitely something to check out. He's one of a kind, he really is.
Because he got smuggled from Europe into the UK.
Yeah, he's done it the hardest way possible.
Yeah.
Right? And he's such a good advocate for the game, for people in his community in London, to be able to see him, what he's done with what little he was given, right? Is amazing. Like, because that's who I came with the pathway with.
Oh, really?
Yeah, me and him were in the same year.
Awesome.
Yeah. So we got to know each other really well. And he's still going strong, right? He's with the Commanders now.
Yeah, he broke his leg last year.
Yeah, he got injured, but they've re-signed him, which is, testament to a guy like him. They've, got injured, they've re-signed him because they see value in him, right? And he's sticking around. I think he's going on 7 years in the NFL now, which is absolutely wild. Because the average is 3 years in the NFL, right? So they call it the NFL not for long.
No.
The not for long league.
Oh, really?
So yeah. Because I can't speak highly enough of him.
He's a great guy. We had him on the show. He told us about his journey. We went through the whole thing. I think he was waiting to become a free agent, which happened last year because he wanted to be signed to a free agent because he could then get unlimited money or whatever he's worth.
Yeah. And
I think
or he can look at the market, right?
Look at him, as opposed to kind of being guaranteed, fixed money. Well, it's time for our Continental Tires question of the week. And we get normally sent these in from viewers and listeners. Mm. We've got millions of them. But we've got a very special one today because Ollie Phillips has got a number of children and they have submitted a number of children.
not something he doesn't know about.
All known. And they've submitted a question, Ollie. Do you want to play it?
Yeah, so, I mean, Al, you've obviously met these two already, right?
Yeah, the crazy bunch.
My two daughters, Lily Mae and Nia. I didn't ask Alfie because he would have been a disaster. But this is the first one from Nia. Hold on.
Apollo, why did you put someone in the ball thingy when you were playing Powerball?
So I think that is a reference to when you dumped someone in the power bin just to sort of show off on Gladiators.
I'll do anything for a bit of screen time. Why did I do it?
I'm
the biggest, baddest, meanest guy on TV,
right? You gave a good quote after that. And then this is another one. This is actually in reference to me and Hask.
Hello, if you were against Daddy in Duel, who do you think would win?
No doubt on the Duel, mate.
Well, first thing I do is make sure you've got some medical insurance in place, because I wouldn't want to, or some Mr. life insurance. I wouldn't want to be leaving those two without a dad.
Yeah, over 65. Sure. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Wait,
yeah.
Mate, Mr. Apollo can sweep in and just pick out the pieces. I think Mrs. Phillips would be quite happy with Mr. Apollo's coming. Yeah,
she'd love it. Yeah, I mean, she'd be what, like,
So you'd reckon Phil Ollie in on that drink?
Absolutely.
I just stay low.
Yeah,
I stay low
quite,
and squat.
He's quite squat and low. I don't know.
Ass could be off in seconds.
Yeah, I'd be straight up. My ankle arthritis had fall straight off.
It's tough up there for bigger guys because it actually wobbles.
Thank you, Lily Mae and Nia, for your Continental Tires question of the week. You're both fantastic. And turns out that your daddy would get beaten by Mr. Apollo. Sorry. I mean, we talked off camera about, you know, we're going full circle now back to the gladiator stuff, but like, you know, how full on is it? You know, did you actively kind of, have you been told to tone it down? Because I can imagine live show, fired up, ready to go. You see these guys, and obviously human psychology, someone could come in looking like $1 million, like, oh, wow, they could be powerful. I don't want to get embarrassed. Have you been told to calm down?
He's already
down
done two ACLs.
That's what I mean. The knee collector.
Yeah. Turn it down, no, but I think so the first thing we ever filmed was Powerball. It was the first Powerball we did, and obviously first game of the series, first time being a gladiator out there in the costume, there was a crowd going wild, and we also didn't know what the contenders were going to be like, and I don't know why he did it, but the first guy literally just ran, took a beel. I think what I was told was apparently in their changing room in the back, apparently the contenders were being like, let's set the tone here, let's get straight into him, blah blah blah. And I didn't know this till afterwards, but I could see from the get-go, because he literally just ran straight at me. And I thought, I'm about to be on live TV here as Apollo. Like, there's no way you're doing any damage to me here. So yeah, that game ended up being an absolute bloodbath. And I think afterwards we were like, well,
start as you mean to go on.
Yeah, let's just keep it going. But like, I've got to say, the guys who come on there and do those games against us, like,
do you have any crack with them?
Yeah, they're all really, really good people.
Yeah, nice to meet you. A bit like NFL, nice to meet you. Now I'm going to go end
it. Yeah, it is a little bit like that. But it's like, it's a tough time for them because they're just getting battered like nonstop in all the different games. And we filmed everything in within 12 days. So sometimes they didn't even get a day off in between ass kickings, right? So
what's all of those like?
Yeah, everything was. It was pretty much every day we filmed an episode. So it was tough. It was tough on them. It was even tough on us, right? I know we were probably on the better side of the equation there, but it was a crazy time because of all the adrenaline as well. You know, you come out and you do a game and it's the most amazing thing ever. Then you got to come back and you got to chill out for a couple hours and you go out again. It was a mad experience. But yeah, there was a few names taken in those games for sure.
With your character, because you haven't had any sort of acting experience for it. Were you told to be Mr. Apollo and this is the way you're going to do it? Or were you all vying for attention? Because we all remember Wolf back in the day, Hunter back in the day. The Wolf was Mr. Nasty, still gets booed now. Were you told to that? Have you just gone, I'm going to just go with it. I'm going to try to get as much sort of limelight as I can. Just, you know, I would. You know what I mean?
You get a lot of routes, right? You get thrown in a lot.
Yeah, yeah. And I think what I was conscious of was that it was going to be something new for me. While there is a competitive element, like that my sports background would lend itself very well to, I also realized it is something new, that it is like a step in a different direction. So what I really wanted to do, and I probably didn't really start doing this until getting to the swing of it, until halfway through the series, was because what I didn't want to do was a copy and after, because you get 15 seconds after a game, right? And I didn't want to be the copy and paste sportsman. Yeah, they did really well, but I was just a little better. We'll go on to the next game. Yeah, I was like, whatever. I've done that for the past 15 years. I want to do something else. I want to expand. I want to develop myself. And that's what the challenge has been. But what they said was they wanted the most exaggerated version of yourself, right? And I think I was kind of billed as...
I'm legally not allowed to do that.
That would be a total disaster for you.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
And I think what they brought me in for was the kind of handsome heartthrob, kind of boy next door kind of guy.
Right. Housewife's favourite.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, yeah. But the guys, the entertainers that I really love are the people like The Rock, Ric Flair, Chael Sonnen from the MMA, who have they have good chat, they've got good mic skills, right? So yeah. It's like, I want to try and develop myself in that way, in some way, without being too forced. I want it to be natural. I don't want to be like some gimmicky person trying to come up with one-liners, etc., right? So...
Like, you can't climb a ladder with hands in your pockets.
Yeah. I want to be cringe, but not too cringe.
Fine.
So yeah, I think it was that's the development for me as an entertainer now, right? Is, you know, I knew I was going to be good at the games, but I also know there's going to be 10 million people watching and they need to be entertained. So like, what is the mixture of that?
Did you get to pick your...
Oh, there's a ghost.
Apollo's power. Apollo's power. Showing through, mate.
Oh, dear. Well, that was terrifying. There? What's happened there? Johnny Mays had it. Do you know why? Because you've been so articulate and given so many good answers, but you're not as quirky as Johnny Mays. Johnny Mays just thrown himself off because he knows he could be replaced. Mate, see you, Johnny.
Did you get to pick your name? Because I've sort of had a look before coming on as like potential.
Oh, I like
gladiator names for Hask and I. But did you pick yours?
No, they picked mine. They gave me a couple of options, but when they said Apollo, I was like. Yeah, I like that.
I'll take that.
I was like, without absolutely screaming and jumping out my skin. I was like, I think that's fine. Yeah, let's do that one.
Oh, God. Apollo. Do I want that one?
Apollo, the god of the sun, is what you're talking about, right? Yeah,
that one, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I had a look for Hask and I. So, Hask, I came up with Momus for you, the god of satire, mockery, and criticism.
Momus?
Yeah.
I could take that.
Yeah.
Hades, yeah. I thought personally, when I was looking at Hades, god of
the underworld. I thought you'd go for Zeus, actually, but I downgraded you.
No, your skill set. I'm definitely underworld.
Erebus, I thought, the personification of darkness, because you go a bit wild.
Dark Erebus.
Guy. Dark guy, that's kind of nice, yeah.
And then for me, my wish list was I'd like to be Pallas, so the Titan god of battle and Warcraft.
Whoa. Yeah, you get done for trade description. They get arrested for fraud. They'd be like,
fraud. So then, and then I thought Hask and I both would love to be Eros, the god of love and desire.
Nice.
I think it's a big stretch, that one.
There used to be a lot of sex shops in Soho called Eros.
Did they? How do you know that?
Led to believe.
As you were walking past.
Yeah.
But then where I stumbled, I thought we'd finish on for me would be Nereus, and that is the old man of the sea.
Yes, Nereus. Nereus and Momus.
a well-travelled old man. Yeah.
Nereus and Momus.
Nereus and Momus and Mr. Apollo.
With Apollo. Loving life.
In terms of the other gladiators, is it very competitive between you two? Have you become a team? Do you walk in and go, fuck, he's looking bigger than me. I need to go and do the gym. Because it must be. But or you a team?
Yeah, I mean, there's no rivalry when you're number one, Hask. Everyone else is just fighting for second.
So many slogans. I kind of love it. Yeah, right.
It is a good team. There is a good team environment. We haven't got any kind of not yet anywhere. We'll see after the success of the first season if anyone kind of turns into a diva or whatever. But they're all really, really good people, and they're all good in their own way. And I think whoever the producers, the casting directors, etc., made a really good point and have done a really good job of bringing a diverse group together where some people are good at some things, some people are good at others. We all look a little different, right? You look at some of the guys who've been in bodybuilding for however long compared to some of the more athlete, you know, type people.
Did you write in for that one?
Which one, the bodybuilding guy,
the gladiator? Did you write him for it, or do you?
Oh, no, you write a letter?
Another letter for that?
No, I was all out of inspirational quotes. I'd burnt my book of inspirational quotes by that time. So the basic way that happened was I was going all the way back to like what was going on prior. I'd played for Bath. Was told I was getting a contract, but didn't. Then went onto the free market and was basically getting, oh yeah, we're really interested because of the NFL thing. Yeah. Everyone wanted to have every cat and their dog wanted to have a chat with me about what could you do, blah, blah, blah. So I was speaking to a lot of teams. A lot of teams said, oh, we'd love to like give you a deal. I actually trialed for a few teams. And then it was visa issues or no, can't do this, too much money, blah, blah, blah. So it was no. I was just thinking, God, am I actually ever going to get a team at this point? And then an old agent of mine, Stu Watkins from Wasserman, he basically messaged me saying, we've had a production company on the phone asking if we know anyone who'd be suitable. In the way he said it was, they've asked if they're putting putting together a team of superhumans. And I thought, Jesus, am I getting scouted for the Avengers here? Like, am I about to go and save the world?
There have been some, honestly, the editor of this, editor Tom, he's like, we need to cut some of these amazing just lines up, just like, you know, like,
so Hask can remember them all.
Accidental Mr. Apollo. Superhuman Superman. Yeah.
Yeah. So they were like, we're putting together like at the time it was labeled superhumans, right?
Right.
And I was like, well, you've got the right guy here.
I shouldn't have checked my email because I don't think I got one.
Junk spam.
Yeah.
Have a look at the spam.
It might be in the junk. Yeah. And basically they were like, would you be interested? And I was like, you know what? And this is going back to like the kind of mindset, you know, I want to see what's out there in the world. Probably a little bit like both of you. You've done so much with your careers, with your lives, etc. Right, on different in different levels. You want to know what's out there in the world. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to do it. So they asked me to do a video audition, and I did it, and I acted up and stuff. And
Come on, mate! What was in there?
Where is that?
Come on, you can't leave us that.
Did you do it? Like, have you seen that bloke who tries to do the nunchucks thing? Hits himself in the head, does a backflip, falls over, then falls through the back of the thing.
I'll show you. I'm trying to remember what I.
Don't pretend you don't remember.
Did you know? Did you put a smoke machine and turn around?
No. It was pretty.
He's so excited about this.
I think the one thing I can remember that I think got them laughing was it was like you had to describe yourself, and I said. I was like, I first described myself as the most electrifying man in sports entertainment. I called myself the Beast from the Northeast, and I was like, I'm 6'5".
Nothing more alive.
Yeah, 6'5", 112 kilograms, can run 100 meters in 11 seconds. My mum says I'm very handsome. Or was that your mum? And then I can't remember. So I said that and sent it off. And
did all this come to you just in 30 seconds? You had to plan this
a little bit. I was like, "What do I like?"
Did you put a leotard on?
No. I was literally in my bedroom.
You lost it, right?
I was in my bedroom, just selfie stick,
Were there posters of you all around the bedroom?
I was thinking now, that's exactly what I should have done.
Yeah, yeah.
But did that, and then they enjoyed that, I think, and they said, "We'd love you to come down and do." Some screen tests, etc. So I went to London and did some stuff in front of camera.
In spandex?
No, just in
your own spandex.
In sportswear.
Yeah.
In sportswear.
Your own branded kit, which is motivational quotes.
Yeah. There was a picture of me. Have you seen that? The Donald Trump campaign was like "Make America Great Again." Yeah. I had a picture of me, and it was like "Make Television Great Again." Is what was on it.
That's so good.
Yeah, amazing.
So I did that. Went down and did it, but at the time it wasn't gladiators. They were just basically trying to pitch to the BBC.
Right.
They were trying to bring it back. It wasn't official.
Oh, right.
So this was like 2 years prior to filming. And from there, they're like, right, that's great. We'll be in touch.
And then nothing for 2 years.
So it was like probably over a year, definitely. And I was like, well, God, if this comes up and I'm like playing, or if I get injured, blah, 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 I can't be doing that. So I went and got a job in an office for a year and a bit.
Just throwing people around on photocopiers.
what were you doing?
I went into executive search recruitment. And I know a lot of them will be watching this. So,
did you spend, I can only imagine the chat on the phone.
No.
Convincing someone to take a job.
Yeah,
it was a good time. Like, it was pretty novel, right? Because like the first time I'd been in I went into professional rugby, so I hadn't even been in. I haven't worked next to women for like however long since I was at school, right? There were parts of the job that were, especially coming from, once you've done something you've loved, right? You can never find. And I was like, God, I hope this TV thing comes off, because like, I'm not sure if I can face another 30 years of this. Yeah. So I did that for a year, and then all of a sudden it was, I was getting sporadic every month or so, and I was pestering them all the time, being like, any news. And then after, probably 6 months prior to, or maybe less than that, maybe like 3 months prior to filming, they were like, the BBC have commissioned it. We're going ahead. We're putting out to the public that you can audition to be a gladiator. And I was just thinking, oh God, great. And then they got it, basically whoever they'd picked, I think it was about 200 people, maybe more. And they basically just then put us on like training days and like physical tests, screen tests, all that type of stuff. And we were told it was going to be 5 tests on the day. We ended up being 12, and we just had to go through them, and we just had to do as well as we could.
Well, like what kind of tests? Like what?
So a lot of it was like, so the guy who did it was like, he's a CrossFit guy. So a lot of them were very like CrossFit-esque, which is like my arch nemesis really, especially as like a games player. So there was like pull up, max pull ups, I had to learn how to climb a rope. And there was like sled pushes. There was like explosive, like power throws. And we did we did like shuttles and agility tests and stuff. And the only really, really interesting one, we did like a one-on-one contact drill.
Just ending everyone.
Well, you were put up against one other person. I was put up against like some huge bodybuilder, and I absolutely ended him. So I think that's why they put me in. Yeah.
For some reason, I can't get out of my mind. Do you remember the old Reebok advert?
Terry Tate, like office linebacker.
Office linebacker.
I swear on my life. As soon as he said he works in the city, I was about to say, well, you're an office linebacker.
Just booming. Just hitting people.
You kill it. You fill it. I love that.
How disappointed were you when you eventually, it was Gladiators, you turned up and you thought Eureka Johnson, the equivalent, is going to be on, and you get Bradley Walsh? I mean,
he's a funny guy though. He's good. I mean, him and Barney were both good. They're both really nice guys.
No, you're angling for series two, so don't worry. Yeah, fine.
I mean, we should probably touch a bit on the rug. Well, actually, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'm actually going to Hong Kong Sevens. I've never been. I got selected as a player to Sevens. Never made it through injury. supposed to play the Lions, against the Lions. They never made it either. I'm very excited to go. You've both played there. What can I expect?
Wild place, isn't it?
Wild,
Hong Kong.
I was actually in the team the last time England won.
That would have been amazing.
That was a good time.
Well, talk me what's so good about it? What's going to be exciting? I mean,
and also, mate, just to give you some more context, when you're going, It's the last time that the Sevens has been played in that stadium. It's closing down after that. They're building houses. It's at one point, it was the most valuable piece of real estate in the world. That site.
Really?
Yeah. So they're knocking it down, building apartments, whatever, on it now. Memories. Out.
Yeah, that South Stand is rocking, isn't it? I think it's their biggest annual event in Hong Kong, isn't it?
It is an amazing experience.
I'm going there.
You will have the best time. Yeah,
we're going to be recording Good Bad Rugby podcast. Ben Kays is out there. The whole team's out there. Yeah. I obviously want to thank the Hong Kong Tourism.
There will be a lot of good, bad, and rugby. Yeah.
Yeah.
In Hong Kong. That's all we can say, really.
He is good, isn't he?
But Hass, you are going to be part of history, right? The last time it's ever going to be played in that stadium, it is going to...
Because normally, wherever I play, it's the last time I ever get invited there. Yeah. So at least you can't blame me.
Can't ever be there again.
Yeah. At least can't blame me shutting down the event.
No.
Not fancy doing a Hong Kong Tens appearance.
I can't run anymore. That's why
I don't really... He pulls that one out all the time. Can't run.
Can't do anything. Well, thank you to Hong Kong Tourism Board and Hong Kong China Rugby for the invite. The tournament's going to be mega. I'm DJing. Lots of stuff to be seen out there. We will be doing a podcast, I think, maybe in the South Stand, potentially, but if it's too chaotic, somewhere around there, because I'm not sure.
It's the best atmosphere. I mean, it is a flagship in the Sevens tournament. It is the jewel in the crown, if you like. I'll be honest, it's what keeps the game going, I think, that tournament, because it's so special. And the atmosphere, you wait till you get there, the atmosphere, the whole of basically Eastern Asia comes and descends into Hong Kong for that.
I'm excited. Yeah. Alex, final question for you. Rugby, NFL, Gladiators, what's next and what haven't you done?
Hopefully season two for the Gladiators is the next thing on the horizon. If I'm going to be completely honest, I feel the Gladiators feels good, man. It's a hell of an experience. It is something I would love to do for the next 10 years. The original show went on for, I think it was nine series, maybe more. If we could replicate that in any way, I think...
Is TV something you want to get into in general?
I think so, yeah. Now that I've seen the entertainment side of it, because, you know, as I said, I worked in the city for a year, I played, you know, professional sports for 15 years. I kind of feel like I need something that has that energy about it, you know. This show is probably pretty unique, right? The Gladiators thing. But it's amazing for me because I love the showbiz element, the entertainment, the trying to move into a new space, but I also love the competing of it, right? I still love getting out there and doing games in front of a crowd. It made me realize what I actually loved about playing sport at the highest level was the oohs and the ahs and the electric feeling you have in a stadium. So yeah, as long as I can hold on to that, that's what I want to do.
When you quoted The Rock, well, you didn't quote The Rock, you talked about The Rock. He went into acting. You know, that's a natural progression from where you are now to maybe doing movies.
Yeah, I mean...
What would be your film, mate?
What would be my film?
Yeah.
Oh, I'd want to be one of them lock, stock action heroes, right? Like diving through windows and... I tell you what, next Superman...
No way you'll fit through a window.
I could see you in like a Guy Ritchie movie. It's like,
do you think?
Just call everyone a slag and a mug. And
I tell you what, the absolute ultimate would be getting to a superhero film, wouldn't it? Superhero actor. Superman.
I think you might be a superhero in your own lifetime, as it is anyway.
I don't know if you heard Hask, he name dropped, he knows Superman.
I do.
Oh, well. Yeah. If you could, you know.
Have a word?
Yeah.
Well, if anyone's...
If he's given up the cape already, hasn't he?
He has, yeah, the cape's gone.
I'll get the next one.
You do have a bit of Clark Kent about you.
That's actually what was in the description for me. You're going to laugh, but that's what they were saying.
Did you write this description again? Because I've been described as a pleasure to be around just by me. That's about...
And Apollo has been described as Superman with a sense of humour.
Well, on that note, you've been listening to The Good, The Bad and The Rugby with Alex Gray, Ollie Phillips and myself, James Haskell. If you like your Gladiators, then please do check out The Good, Scars and Rugby, where we had Jodie Ounsley, a.k.a. Fury, talking all about her exploits. It's a fantastic episode, so please go back and listen now. Thank you to our good friends at Continental Tires. We're a Folding Pocket production. This episode was produced by Tom Edwards.
You've been listening to The Good, yay, The Bad, and The Rugby, oof, with Alex Payne, James Haskell and Mike Tyndall. Thanks for listening.
This is amazing. I've met someone who's got even worse chat than I have. What,